Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and how to overcome our bitter partisan divide in the United States is a regular theme on this show. As listeners know, we're living in an increasingly isolated world where people don't engage in direct relationships like they used to and connect with other human beings at a distance through social media sites and phones. I lived in a world, brought up in a world, where we had more interpersonal connections the old-fashioned way, in person. I think that's part of the problem with the intense partisan divide we face, and more interpersonal relationships are perhaps a way to start helping to overcome that. And anything that promotes that, I'm a fan of. So today's show is along those lines, with a conversation about a book without overt political themes, but certainly with applications that have broader significance for today's world, including in our politics, I believe. The book is called Brothers, Beers, and Bears: A Memoir of Friendship, Adventures, and Mishaps, and the author is my guest today. He's Joseph Sobota, and I'll say up front, for transparency, he's a good friend. He's a fellow grad of Monmouth College and a member of the Sigma Phi Epsilon fraternity. Joe, welcome to Heartland Politics.
Thank you, Robin. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, it's an interesting book, but I think very timely in a broader perspective, but I first wanted to kind of ask you, you know, what brought you, I guess, to the place where you wanted to write a book on this specific topic, and what were your aims coming out of that?
Well, when you have relationships that go back 50 plus years, you realize how important and how special that time period was. And the fortunate part of writing the book was that most of the characters, especially the college friends, are all still alive. And so it was a collaborative effort, and we could laugh at the stories and the escapades that we went through. And it is a different time than now. We didn't have cell phones, we didn't have electronic devices. So the relationships were made kind of like we're doing here, person to person. And that's what was so important. And I think as time goes on, I'm 70 years old, you realize how special it was and how different it is today.
I'd ask our listeners to just follow along with us here, because I do think there's a broader point that's being made here. But the book is funny, but it's very poignant at times, and I think it's just an interesting book in a lot of levels. First of all, you're from the suburbs of Chicago, out a little ways. What brought you to a more rural community like Monmouth in order to go to college?
Well, that's an interesting story. It was our senior year, and one of my friends, who turned out to be a college mate and fraternity brother, Bill Merschel, was going to Monmouth on a campus, campus tour our senior year, and asked if I would like to attend. And I'm thinking, okay, fine, because I had other colleges in mind. And so we went for a weekend to Monmouth College, and I just fell in love with it. I love the community. I love the size of the school. And the professors were very outgoing. And in fact, we stayed at the fraternity house that we ended up pledging, and they hosted us. And it was just a great experience.
So you make the decision to go to Monmouth, and you become friends with somebody that, again, is from a totally different lifestyle and culture. Can you talk about that a little bit, and kind of the other person who's a main protagonist in the book?
Well, yes, Ray is a local Monmouth farmer, and he's a year younger. And so the relationships in a fraternity or at a small college transcends where you came from or your background. The college had students as far from Hawaii as to New York and everywhere in between. And so relationships, especially in a fraternity where you had brothers from all different city sizes, different states, you just accept each other as they are, and your relationships are based on just common interests, maybe majors that you're taking, or even just coursework, but not necessarily the same major. So that's how I met Ray. And that's, I have to say that with Ray, no matter how many stories you have, he always has one that's better than yours.
Well, I can't, again, my listeners and you, Joe, will forgive me because my mind is pretty focused on politics these days. But I see in reading this, I kept thinking of the larger political dimensions of this. And here's a guy from the suburbs of Chicago, chooses a more rural school to go to. And one of his best friends, who really the book is about, is somebody totally opposite you in a lot of ways and your upbringing and all. But you managed to do that. And I would just add that politics really isn't mentioned in this book at all, but I think that's the allure of it, to me anyway. So, okay, so you meet Ray, and I want to get to the book a little bit here because it starts with a bang, literally.
Well, politics at that age really is not involved. You're just having fun. You're building that relationship. And even though we have different politics now, it's not an issue because we are friends. And so you can talk, you can discuss, you can disagree, but it is not going to change the relationship between us. And so, as you said, the book does start out in a remote Alaska. We're on a caribou hunt, and Ray, through excitement or whatever, pulls the trigger on his rifle, and the bullet just barely misses my ear. Now, the story could have ended right there, but it continues. And anyway, that's how it starts. So yes, you're right, literally with a bang.
The book kind of follows you from your some of what goes on campus and then some trips you made. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Again, maybe contrasting a little bit with now, in that you all had a very adventurous spirit that I don't know. I can't say now if kids have that or not. I'm sure they'd like to go to spring break down to Florida or whatever. But take us through some of the trips you had, and I think really interesting things, experiences you had during your college life.
Well, it starts with college life, and you know, they're the initiation process and all that in the fraternity. But once you have a group of friends, you start talking about, okay, what do we want to do together? And so the first real trip was to Missouri, to the Current River, to go canoeing. And so four of us start on that escapade, which in itself is a whole series of funny events that happen. And it does not make a difference whether it's going canoeing or through a college off-campus class in the Florida Keys. That generates its own stories. And that is where what made Monmouth actually very special is because the professors listened to the students, listened to their interests, and encouraged their dreams. And that was part of Florida. So there you had a group of 15 students in a broad, I guess, a diverse interest in majors, but were going to Florida partly to escape the Midwest winter. And we just developed a whole, I guess, a lifelong series of stories just based on that 3 weeks in Florida. And it continued, I mean, through there to Canada and then ultimately to Alaska. And so the book covers all of those in the various escapades. So I'd say it's like Tom Sawyer and Forrest Gump, you know, a little Animal House mixed in. That's kind of how I would summarize it.
I thought the writing style was similar to Hemingway. That's what I kept thinking of as I was going along. But the interesting story from Missouri was the exploration of the caves, which my only knowledge of that deals with the remember the Thai, was it a soccer team? The boys got caught in caves and it was an international news and they got them saved. But that's what I kept thinking of. You guys were first of all, I didn't realize they had those types of caves in Missouri, but that you guys were doing that some 50 years ago.
Well, again, the outdoor club in Woodstock, our hometown, Woodstock, Illinois, you know, had suggested this trip when we talked about canoeing, and then as a side trip would be visiting some caves. And so we didn't know what to expect actually with that. And so going into a cave is one thing. And then what we wanted to experience was a cave without the crowds. And that we did. And, you know, that, like I said, leads to a whole series of stories itself. But, you know, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have, you know, social media. You just have four guys on this trip that are just having fun. And maybe in some cases, yeah, we probably bit a little bit off more than we could chew. And we put ourselves in some positions that were not necessarily sound and safe. But we lived through it, you know, by the grace of God.
Yeah, the pitch black in those caves. I mean, you did a great job in the book of describing that. And it's like, it would be very eerie now to have that and that sense of the unknown and fright almost. But yeah, you guys lived through it.
Yeah, and some people that have read the book said that they're surprised I'm still alive. But I think that was, you know, that's part of, you don't really, you're immortal at that age, you know, 19 to 22, 23, you're immortal. And you don't think about it, you just think about it, it's an adventure. And let's get into a cave and let's turn off the lights and see how dark it is. And yes, it is dark. I've never experienced darkness, and I can only imagine with somebody that's blind, that must be what they feel. It is a eye opener, to excuse the pun.
I thought it was interesting that a lot of your stories dealt with hunting and fishing. And you know, when I was a kid, I wasn't a hunter. I fished a little. I gave it up for golf, but that was probably one of my worst choices in my life. But it seems like this camaraderie goes along with outdoor activities like that, again, where you're directly involved with somebody. And I think you said it best there, where you, the fraternity, you were looking for things to do together, and hunting and fishing were a way to go out and do some things together. Those aren't as popular now. It seems like they've kind of receded in popularity along with the rise of like social media and other alternatives for young people to do on their own. Is that something, I guess, that you thought of in putting this book together?
Well, I get the response from people, and it's not so much whether it's hunting or fishing. When you're with a group and you're talking to a group of brothers or you know, fellow classmates or whatever, you find out where the interests are, where some commonalities are. And it could be some adventure. It could be just, let's go skiing, let's go hiking. It doesn't have to involve hunting or fishing. But if you don't talk to people, get to know them, and even some of these, you know, are not hunters or fishermen, but they wanted canoeing or they wanted an adventure in Florida. And I think the only way you know is by talking and meeting people and finding, yeah, let's go do this. And I think that's part of what came out of the book is, yes, there's a common thread with myself and Ray in the book, but people come and go in the stories. And I think that's the part where that's life. You know, we have people we socialize with and people we do activities with, people that are just good friends, but you know, distance probably keeps you from doing other things.
You listen to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and today my guest is Joseph Svoboda. Joe is an author of a new book that's out called Brothers, Bears, and Beers, a memoir of friendships, adventures, and mishaps. It's really a really compelling tale of friendship, and I think it's particularly important in this day and age to talk about that and how years ago, perhaps there's some lessons for now in having more close friendships where you actually do things together. I think that's a key word, doing things together. And this relates a little, my contention is, to our partisan divide, that we've got to be able to talk to people from different cultures, different places where they live, and be able to at least communicate some and empathize some with them. And I think this book while it's not overtly political, kind of points in a direction that maybe we need to get back to somehow. That's why I thought this was important to talk about a little bit here. I guess my question, Joe, all these years have gone by. You've had a successful career. You're retired. What caused you right now to kind of go back and put all this together? Was there something in particular that motivated you to do this now, or why hadn't you done it earlier?
Well, I'm not a natural writer, and some people ask that question, and I'll say, well, I'm just slow. The other is I started writing it about 7-8 years ago and kind of gave up, realizing I had other interests, and the discipline that a writer is required of a writer was not, it was lacking for me. When COVID came, that's a different story. So then I had some time to sit down, and I kind of developed a new, flow to the story. And I punched out the first draft in about 3 months. And it was motivated by, I guess, this series of stories, the friendships and the stories themselves have always been kind of core to me. And I finally wanted to put it to paper, not realizing where it would end up going, but that's the storyline.
And I have to ask you, and just so our listeners know, where the proceeds of this book will be devoted to?
Yes, all proceeds from the book will go to the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Research. I just know too many people that have that terrible disease, and I'm finding from people that have bought the book that part of it is because of the donations and people that know those that have Parkinson's. So that's where all the money goes.
Did you have all these years later? You didn't keep a diary or anything like that, or maybe you did, but did you have to go back and talk to people and say, do I remember this the right way from what you experienced?
Well, here's what you realize. One, I did have a journal for the Alaska part, and then my dad had a journal as well, so we could put things together that way. But it was a collaborative effort. So contacting Ray or Doc or Bill, these other people involved, it's amazing to me how my memory sometimes was not as clear as theirs. And so whenever I was writing, I always felt like they were on my shoulder because I gave them sections to read, to proof edit. And so it was really a team effort is what I would say. And it's as close to the truth as we can remember, which I'm sure there's probably 10% or 15% that any of us remember, but it's included. So this is as true as it can come.
So the ultimate adventure, and there's several in here, as you mentioned, Missouri and Key West and Canada and Alaska, but for you to be just literally, for our listeners, dropped off in the middle of nowhere in Alaska, and again, no cell phones. And the guy, the pilot, says, I'll pick you up, and what was it, a week or whatever? But you didn't, I didn't read anything there where you're like, boy, this is crazy, or boy, I really wonder if we should, do this. Of course, towards the end, it gets a little skittish when the guy doesn't show up when he's supposed to. But was there any thought? It just seems like now, and maybe I'm being unfair, but kids would have to check with their parents. I don't see anywhere where you called and said, hey, mom, dad, do you mind if I go do this? It just seems different. But what were your thoughts, you and Ray, in planning that out? Was it, you look back and you think, boy, we were crazy, or?
Well, hindsight's always 20/20. And I think certainly that people are saying, what the hell were you thinking? And, clearly the answer is we probably weren't. And so you just take it as an adventure that it sounds simple enough that you're going to pay for a pilot to drop you off someplace. Yes, we had my uncle help us, who is a seasoned Alaskan and things like that. But it's different when you're in a house setting up your stuff off to the side and you say, okay, this is going to be easy. And then when they drop you off and you realize you're out in the middle of nowhere, where any little injury, like you said, the book starts off with a bang with a bullet whizzing past my ear. You realize this is a little bit more than we thought it would be. This is, and as that series goes on, the Alaskan part especially, it's one of those things that My wife will say, you know, again, what were you thinking? And we weren't.
The Canada trip featured some beautiful recollections on fishing and all. And of course, the Alaska trip, I don't want to give too much away because I encourage our listeners to go get this book. But potential run-ins with some bears, which would, of course, be something you'd prefer to avoid, all things being equal, and some lessons learned. But I was struck too, by your brought up several times your faith and the fact that you felt, and I don't want to put it, my words into yours, but the presence of God or whatever in the beauty of the places you were at. Can you talk a little bit about that and share? Would you mind sharing a little of that with us?
Sure. It doesn't make a difference if you're underground in a cave in Missouri, or you're snorkeling off the Keys in Florida, or you're fishing in Canada, or you're seeing this pristine beauty in remote Alaska. God's presence is certainly there in the creation he has put in front of us. The part that we also realize, and maybe in hindsight years later, and maybe not necessarily years later, but maybe moments after something happens, how you're protected too, because we're in situations that, and then, yeah, not to take away anything from the book or surprises, but yes, we're put into, mostly by our choice, and clearly a poor choice at the time, you're protected. And so over time, do I realize where God was in not only the physical beauty around us, but the moments that he protected us. And I think all of us will have moments that we can clearly see, yes, we're saved by the hand of God or whatever, but it's the near misses that we don't even acknowledge that we realize how close we came. And those are not really acknowledged in the book, although probably every chapter has something that's, you know, that his protection was there.
I want to talk too about fraternities, and these days it seems like if a fraternity is in the news, it's for something bad. There was a different era when you and I went to college back in the 1970s. And I guess I'm not asking our listeners to kind of adopt our views on it. That isn't the purpose at all. But I think for those who are maybe unfamiliar, have only heard one side of it, can you talk a little bit about the Greek system and the advantages of that? I think you've touched on some of that, but maybe talk about the benefits of fraternities and what it's meant to you over the years.
Well, certainly the fraternity in the 70s is different than today. And so when you write a memoir, you're transporting someone to that time, and they may not agree with the amount of alcohol or how we dressed. And I look at that and thinking, yeah, how we dressed was clearly off. But now it's different. And there's nothing wrong with today. It's just different. And probably 50 years from now, it's going to be different than it is today. But fraternity life is a tremendous way of preparing for life, because when we were active in college, there were 45 to 50 people, brothers in the fraternity. So you are really a family, and it's a dysfunctional family at times, but you learn how to solve problems. You know, you are there if somebody needs help. You're there if somebody has an emotional breakdown because they broke up with their girlfriend or their girlfriend broke up with them. And through that, through living together and across really a broad spectrum, because as a freshman, you're with seniors, and as you're a senior, you're with freshmen. So it really kind of covers about a 6-7 year period of age. And so the diversity of the fraternity is special, and it's a bond that transcends just being in a dorm or a biology major or any major. No, this is a group that has to solve lives together and solves problems together, and they party together. Yes, you know, anyway, it's special.
I have time for one more question. We got about 2 or 3 minutes left here, but for somebody out there who's not a hunter or fisherman, not a member of a fraternity or sorority, maybe didn't attend Monmouth College, whatever. What would you compel or would you recommend them to this book that it offers, you know, a broader audience to perhaps read, or somebody even younger, outside the specific interests of the content of the book?
Surprisingly, about half of the people that are purchasing it are women. And so part of that is it's a book that doesn't have sex. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't really have violence in it at all. It's just a couple of guys or four or five people, depending on what section you are in the book, of just having fun. They make mistakes, they get out of it. And I think that the specialness is that we live in a society now that it seems to me we wake up with bad news. And I did not want a book that was going to be a downer. And to me, again, you know, Ray, what you do, you know, it's hard to have a bad day when you're around Ray. Now, it may not go as you planned, but you're going to have, at the end of the day, a memory of some sort. And that's what I wanted to have come across. Just fun, just to have fun in a society that is kind of cynical. And, you know, my camp, your camp, but this is just a group of guys that met in the middle and just had fun.
Well, that's a good way to wrap it up. And that's the way I see the book as well, and why I want to devote some time to it. I think it does go back to an era where I do think there's applications for today, just in the nature of relationships. And maybe we need to try to get back to that. It'd be good for us as people, but it would be good for us as a nation as well. And I think you've done a good job in writing and talking today about that, about the benefits of it. Again, my guest today has been Joe Sobota. He's the author of a book called Brothers, Bears, and Beers, a memoir of friendships, adventures, and mishaps. The mishaps are quite hilarious. We've touched on a couple here, but we don't want to go any further than that. The book's available through Amazon and other lots of other places. Joe's got a website. His last name is S-V-O-B-O-D-A, if you want to look it up. And again, the proceeds go to Joe.
Yes, the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Disease Research.
Okay. So, Joe, thank you again for being our guest and our listeners. Check out the book. I think you'll enjoy it, and it'll make for a nice read. And as Joe said, kind of a different type of approach, and something that may be a little less intense, but just as much fun as they may enjoy with other activities.
Thank you, Rob, and have a wonderful day, and thank you for this time. And the readers
thank you.
As well.
Listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.